how everybody would talk about Brooke. She's so quiet, she never talks. We're like, well, when she was little, we were like, you ought to see how much she talks at home. She just talked, jabbered all the time as a little toddler and as a young girl. And now as a teenager, maybe not quite as much, Brooke, right? She's not even wanting to look at me. But a quiet life. What is a quiet life? What is a quiet life? I think this is a topic that we should consider in this world today. Paul says here in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 9, or verse 11, aspire to it. The ESV says, aspire to live quietly. The New King James says, aspire to lead a quiet life. Seems almost a contradiction. Aspire to do something, to try to be ambitious about it, and the thing you're supposed to be ambitious about is being quiet, which kind of seems to go together or go opposite of each other sometimes, because we think of activity and busyness and achievement as aspiring, and quiet here is used more in the term of restful, peaceful, calm, relaxed. I think about in Paraguay, when we went down there for our missionary training and working with some of the missionaries, some of the mission work down there years back, they have a term in Paraguay they call tranquilo. And it is referring to the idea of peace and calm and relax. And I remember asking one of the missionaries after they had spent several years down there and been back in the U.S. for a little bit, what do you miss most about Paraguay? And they said, I miss the restfulness, the quietness, the tranquilo. I miss that idea of rest. And here's the idea. They're busy down there. They have a lot to do. And they don't have near as many of the conveniences that we have. But he said that the idea is that they don't have near as much going on. They only focus on a small number of things. And they spend more time resting and relaxing. A calmness. Being more centered in your life and more consistent in your life. And so when we think about what Paul's saying here, he's saying living the quiet life and what is involved in living a quiet life. And then we'll notice three things that Paul says that a quiet life should entail. First of all, the Thessalonians had become so excited that they were excited about the return of Christ that it led to the sin of idleness and gossip. And I would say that this applies in our context because over the last, just over 2020, I think some people have, because of work conditions changing, maybe because of being confined to home, I think that there has been some idleness and gossip, and there's been more, we might say, laziness and more just time people have on their hands, which has led to a lot of sins of things like domestic violence and alcohol abuse and drug abuse and other problems, pornographic, internet problems going up. And then all these things have kind of come from, and I think even some of the problems we're seeing in our larger culture with riots and things have even come from the ideas that people aren't working, they have a lot more time on their hands, and it leads to problems. And so Paul's saying, you've been so excited about the return of Christ that they quit their jobs, and it has led to idleness and gossip. And so he says you need to aspire to lead a quiet life. What's a quiet life? Well, when you think about the term quiet, it's used, you see here in Luke 14:4, 23:56. And in Luke 14, it refers to silence in speech when the Pharisees and lawyers are to keep quiet, or they kept quiet after Jesus' question. In Luke 23:56, ladies after the burial of Jesus are said to have rested on the Sabbath day. The word translated rested here is the same word as in 1 Thessalonians 4, translated quiet. After Jesus had been crucified, on that Sabbath day, they rested. They were quiet. They had a calm about them. In Acts 11:18 and Acts 21:14, the word is used when people ceased arguing and they gave no further objections. They ceased fighting, ceased arguing. And so the idea is, it refers to peaceful, restful, simple, that kind of life. There was, we often relate in our culture, and I don't know that we understand fully their culture, but we, from our English kind of ways, we kind of look at it more like the Amish. We sometimes look, well, that's a peaceful existence. That's a quiet existence. And I don't, maybe if we went and lived with them a little while, we might think it's actually a lot of work, a lot of stress. But we kind of can view it in that way sometimes, can't we? It's a simple existence. It's a calm existence. And I think that's the term. We're not talking about, as I was joking earlier about as a toddler, the kid that just constantly asking questions. We're not talking about just being quiet. We're talking about our calmness. The quiet life does not come without a concerted effort. He says aspire to it. And so it involves, Romans 12:18, seeking to live in peace with others. So it involves peace. It involves 1 Timothy 2:1-2, diligently praying for quiet and peaceful lives. Pray that we can have a quiet and peaceful life. We need to pray for that. Pray for peace. Pray for our leaders that they can provide a quiet and peaceable life for us. We need to learn contentment, Philippians 4:11-13. And we need to have the peace that passes understanding, Philippians 4:6-7, that can give us a quiet life. And so the quiet life involves a life of focus, a life of focusing in on things. And so it's the purpose of which is so that we can live properly toward those who are outside. So we do this, back to the text, we do this in order to maintain a strong reputation. Look at verse 12. Verse 11, aspire to live a quiet life. And he's going to tell us a few things what that means. Verse 12, so that you may walk properly before outsiders and be dependent on no one. The reason we should want to live a calm, peaceful life is because we have Christ in our hearts. We have the calm, the peace that passes understanding. When the world is in a storm around us, we can have calm, we can have quietness, we can have peace, and the world can say, man, how are they calm? How are they peaceful? And you've seen this kind of idea put forward in all kinds of shirts. You know, be calm and then they have different things there. Well, for a Christian, we should be calm because of Christ. We have that peace that Christ can give us. And so this should be a testimony to those who are outside, and that should cause us then to not have to depend upon others in a financial kind of way because we're living a consistent, peaceful life. And so we do this in order to maintain a strong reputation. Now, there's three characteristics here of a quiet life. And I think these three characteristics are things that probably your grandparents told you should be when you were young. This is old-time wisdom here. This is things that if we could put these three things into practice, they would transform our world. The first one is, verses 9 and 10, we ought to have brotherly love, brotherly love. Notice, Paul says, they were taught by God. He says, I don't have to even teach you this because you have been taught by God to love one another. Now, I think the idea is not that they were taught miraculously to love, but I think the idea is they have been shown by God what it is to love one another. In other words, you have the example of Christ, the example of God, of what it means to love. And if you think about it, the outsiders, verse number 12, these that we're supposed to be walking properly before, they don't really know what true love is. Think about people that have grown up in homes where they were not taught about God, maybe grown up in homes where they were abused emotionally, verbally, or physically by their parents. Maybe growing up in homes that were divided, where they didn't really see a love between a mom and a dad. And you think about that kind of situation, or you think about people that are in the world that don't have a concept of God and the love that He has, and how they really don't know what love is. And we hear our world talk a lot about love. And we hear a lot of things in songs, and we hear a lot with the with different movements from the, you know, the homosexual movement and different kind of movements. It just needs to be about love and not hate. Love, love. And the problem with so much of that is really what it's saying is we just want acceptance and just accept everybody and don't have any kind of form of judgment or any form of rules or any kind of right or wrong with that. But the problem with all that kind of love is it's not godly love. It's not love that's been taught by God. It's not the Christ kind of love. It's not a love that is sacrificial. It's not a love that understands that there's going to be still truth. There's going to be right and wrong in that. And that there's still judgment and there's still justice and there's still these principles of God that are at play when we have love taught by God. And so he says, you know how to love because you've been taught by God. They have been taught by God what it is to love. And you and I, if we're living the quiet life, when it comes to when someone speaks against us or when someone does something wrong to us or when we're dealing with the chaos of our world, we can know how to handle that. We can know that we're taught to love and how we should love others. And we can know we've been loved by God. Why? Because God is our example. We know, first of all, that we've been loved by God. Remember what John says in 1 John 4? We love others because He first loved us. And if you don't know that you've first been loved by God, you don't really know how to love others. And so Paul says, we've got brotherly love. They had a brotherly love for fellow Christians in the region. Continuing to read in verse 9. For you've been taught by God to love one another, for that indeed is what you are doing to all the brothers throughout Macedonia. Now, Macedonia is a region. It's a lot of people in that area, numerous churches in that area. But we urge you, brothers, to do this more and more. Notice that they love the brethren throughout the region. This is a family love in God's family. This is the kind of love that the Bible talks about, which is the Greek term Philadelphia, which is the idea of a brotherly family love. It's different than the agape love, which is that self-sacrificial love, but this is that, once again, a very high form of love where you love someone as your family. He says you're in God's family, and you're loving not just those of your local church, but you're loving the brethren all throughout the region of Macedonia. We need to love the brethren throughout the region. We need to love our brethren throughout West Kentucky. We need to love our brethren throughout the nation. We did that just recently. I was talking to a brother with Bread of Life, and he was telling me that we were able to send that whole truckload of stuff down. And then he said we sent $40,000 more down from churches in West Kentucky to help with the Hurricane Laura relief efforts. And he was talking about how good of a turnout it all was for that. And you think about, that's love. And that's love for brethren. And that's love for others that we don't know personally, but it's loving. And that's love from our region going to another region. That's what Paul's talking about here. That's brotherly love. That's family kind of love. We need to love our brethren. We need to love our brethren when it comes to thinking about the struggles that churches are having now. And encourage our brethren, encourage other churches, because churches have gone through a lot this year. And let's encourage one another. And so love one another. And then also on this, notice that the quiet life then focuses upon a love for one another. We ought to be doing this more and more. We ought to be excelling in our love. And so when it comes to thinking about how do I handle all the chaos of the news media and the world around me, a quiet life means I love the ones who are in my presence, who are in my sphere of influence, those that I have the opportunity to love. I love my fellow man. I have a brotherly love for them. But secondly, Paul would say, mind your own affairs, verse 11. Mind your own affairs. Because of idleness, they were focused on the business of others. In 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 15, Peter puts gossiping and idleness and being a busybody on par with murderers and thieves. It's something that the Bible condemns. Probably some members of the church were constantly meddling into the affairs of the leadership of the church. Because later on in chapter 5, 12 through 13, he asked them to respect those who labor among you and are over you in the Lord and admonish you and to esteem them very highly in love because of their work and be at peace among yourselves. Now, if you've been in the church very long and you read that sentence, then you probably know that what the apostle is doing is saying some of you guys are not respecting your leaders. Some of you are meddling and are gossiping and are being busybodies and are getting into the affairs of your leaders. And what you need to do is you need to esteem them highly in love for their work. And you need to be at peace among yourselves. You need to get along with each other. Probably they were focused then not only on the affairs of the leaders of the church, but they were probably focused upon other people's business. And that's the idea of mind your own affairs. Now, this is not saying that we should not care, for example, about a brother who's gone spiritually astray. The Bible would tell us to seek after the lost sheep. And the Bible would tell us that we should bear one another's spiritual burdens. But there's also a line there that we are to focus on our own affairs first and foremost and not get wrapped up in busybodiness, idleness, gossiping, and rumors about other people. This continued to be a problem because later on in chapter 3 of the second letter he wrote to them probably 6 months or so later, he had to tell them the same thing in chapter 3, verse 11, where he says, "We hear that some among you walk in idleness, not busy at work, but are busy bodies. Now, such persons we command and encourage in the Lord Jesus Christ to do their work quietly and to earn their own living." Apparently, there was some idea of this, that they were also possibly financial parts of this, that they were wanting to constantly mooch, we might say, off of their brethren. Instead of taking care of their own problems and their own financial needs, they were always asking and depending upon others for it. And so Paul says, you're being idle, you're being busybodies, and you need to take care of your own needs and not be dependent solely on others. And it continued to be a problem. And so the quiet life doesn't seek to meddle in the affairs of others. And so a quiet life is one who focuses upon our own problems first and foremost. I think this is a situation where this is a principle, and we shouldn't overabuse this principle to try to say, well, I shouldn't, you know, if brethren hadn't been here for a while, I shouldn't contact them, or I shouldn't, if a brother's going through a hard time, I shouldn't try to help them out, or if I'm going through a hard time, I shouldn't ask for help from someone else. We understand that the Bible talks in many other places about how we need to rely upon one another, and we should have the church as a help, but as in all things, there needs to be discernment in these things. And we need to keep balance in these things. And so there needs to be a balance in how much we get involved in other people's affairs, especially in a gossiping, sinful kind of way. I think that's where they were. And I think this is closely connected with the third issue here because we've seen this all throughout these passages. Their idleness caused them to be busybodies into other people's business because they weren't working with their own hands. Look at verses 11 and 12. "Live quietly, mind your own affairs, and to work with your hands as we instructed you." Now, I don't think it's by accident that Paul says work with your hands. I think he's saying that because many of the people he's writing to in Thessalonica, this is an assumption, but it's likely the case that they were what we might call the lower economic strata of society. They were the laborers, day laborers, and Christianity often grew the fastest amongst the common people. And in this day and age, most of the common people were tradesmen. They were some type of person who worked with their own hands. If you think about Jesus, he was a carpenter. If you think about Paul, he was a tent maker, people who worked with their own hands. If you think about many of the jobs we find in the New Testament, they are jobs that are done, we might call manual labor. And so Paul's saying, you need to work with your own hands. And I think there's an implied message there. Don't be ashamed of the job you have. You may not have, in our culture, you may not have a top-tier job. You may not be a supervisor. You may not have an easy office job, we might say in our language. But Paul's saying, whatever job you have, do it well and see the value in it. Every job has a purpose. From the person who is serving as a janitor in a situation to the person who's serving as the administrator or CEO, every one of them has an important role and is essential to the success of that work. And it's the same in the church, isn't it? That every role, whether it's a prominent role or whether we might consider it a lowly role or a common role, every one of those roles are essential for the success of the church. And Paul's saying that when we get focused on other things, we need to come back to our labor. And that there's some benefit, a great benefit, to keeping our hands busy so our mind stays busy. And then if our hands don't stay busy, our minds tend to get in trouble. And so he exalts labor. Remember in Genesis chapter 3, when Adam and Eve get in trouble, he makes their labor harder, but it is not labor that is cursed. They were going to tend and keep the garden before they fall into sin. Work is not a curse. And when I say work, it's not just what you do from 9 to 5. It's being busy with your hands. It's doing things with your life, having a purpose in your life. Work is not a curse. You were created to do things. And when we get involved in idleness and laziness and those kind of not doing it, no ambition, no purpose, then we lose our drive. We lose our sense of significance. And Paul is saying that we need to remind ourselves that God created us, Ephesians 2:10, for good works. God wants sin replaced with honest work, Ephesians chapter 4, verse 28. Find purpose then, Colossians 3:22 through 24, when he talks about whatever we do, do it heartily as unto the Lord. Find purpose in your work. Think about what work does for you. Work protects your reputation. And that's what he's saying here in Philippians and 1 Thessalonians. It will help you to walk properly before outsiders, and it will help you to be dependent on no one. Work will help supply your needs. Work will give you independence because you don't have to be dependent upon anyone else. And work will allow us to help others. Acts 20:35. More blessed to give than receive. And so when we think about work, the quiet life involves work. Now I want to come back to, as we conclude, when we think about aspiring, try to live a quiet life. What does a quiet life look like? In our day and age, where we have technology, where we have all the different changes that are going on, a quiet life looks the same as it did 100 years ago. It looks the same as it did 2,000 years ago when Paul wrote this. The basic principles, I kind of jokingly called it your grandmother, granddad's principles that they live by, that they taught you. And that is basic things. Love your fellow man. Love your fellow man. Mind your own business. You know, stay in your lane. Take care of yourself. Take care of what you need to take care of. And love your fellow man in that. And work with your own hands. So you don't have to depend upon others. And you can provide and help and bless others. Now think about a lot of problems that maybe exist in your own life. Or have existed in your own life. Young people, think about your kids even. Your parents tell you. They tell you, you need to find something to what? Do. Because if you don't find something to do, you're going to be in trouble. Find something to do. Your teachers at school tell you, you guys better quit that. The coach says, you guys better quit. You better find something to do. It's the same for all of us. And that's one of the big problems in our culture today. One of the big problems in our world today is so many people don't have something to do with their own hands. They don't have significance and purpose in their life of accomplishing things. And so they get out there and they cause problems and get in trouble because they don't understand what love is. They hadn't been taught by God what love is. They don't mind their own affairs, and they don't work with their own hands. This evening, if you're not a child of God, then I would encourage you to put Christ on in baptism in any way we could. If you need to rededicate your life and come back to the Lord, please come as together we stand and as we sing.